So we're going to start now the Gemara, which is on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis. So the last line on the Daf, we just to review, the Mishnah had established a few very important points. Point number one was the problem of Gilgul Beitza, when you put an egg on the side of this urn, this hot urn, and what you generate is something called Gilgul HaBeitza, which means that some part of the Beitza inside begins to cook and begins to get hard. Other parts of the egg are still soft. But nevertheless, you're not allowed to do this. Now, if it was a Kli Cheres, if it was not a Mecham, which is usually made of something like copper, but it was made of earthenware, then it gets very, very hot. And that could cause a full-fledged Bishul. The Chiddush of our Mishnah is that you're not allowed to even put the baits on the side of this urn, which is made of copper, because it's going to start the process of Bishul. That was point number one in the Mishnah, is that that's going to be the focus of the Gemara Ziboilahu at the very beginning of the Sugyas HaGemara. But just to mention a few other points in the Mishnah records a machlokas between Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi regarding Toldos HaChama. We know that Ar and Toldos HaAr are Do'oraisa, and that's Bishul Mamish. But in the case of Chama, there's no Bishul, and you're allowed to put an egg in the sun and have it cook with solar heat. But what about Toldos HaAr? Toldos HaChama. What happens if the sun heats up something? Are you allowed to use that something in order to generate Bishul? And that's Machlokes between the Chachamim Rav Yossi and our Mishnah. The Chachamim Aseret, they're afraid that you might confuse Toldos HaChama with Toldos HaAr. And Rav Yossi is Matir, he doesn't have that Chashash. Then the Mishnah goes on to establish that there is one case in which Rav Yossi agrees that Toldos HaChama is a problem, and that's going to be the case of Chol and Avak Drachim, the sand that was heated up by the sun. And it could be that the problem there is what's called Hatmana, which means that when you take this food, let's say an egg, and you surround it completely by submerging it totally in the Chol, in the sand, that's already a problem of what we call Hatmana. And here we mentioned that the Rishonim are going to talk about whether this is on Shabbos or it's Erev Shabbos. Is it Mosif Hevel? Is it not Mosif Hevel? And then finally we have the Maisa of Anshei Tveria. And what did the Anshei Tveria do? We'll interpret this Mishnah now according to Tosfos. They stretched out this pipe underneath the hot springs of Tveria. And what they did was, on Erev Shabbos, they set up a system in which the cold water would go into this pipeline. And because it's surrounded by the heat of Chamei Tveria, therefore it's going to heat up the water, and they're going to take a bath by collecting that water into a bathtub. And the Anshei Tveria thought that was okay, there's no problem with this. And the Chacham asked it. And what we discussed yesterday was that the reason why the Chacham asked it is because they see this as Hatmana. And it's certainly a Davarish and Mosif Hevel, gets hotter and hotter. Okay, let's start the Gemara of Iboilahu. That's what we're up to. Iboilahu, Gilgel Mahu, Mai. What's the story if he violated the Isur that was formulated in the Mishnah? And he took his egg and he put it up against the side of this urn. And he began a process of Bishul, which is called Gilgal. And the question here is, what is the din? Is he chayav for violating Mevashel Midoraisa, which means he has to suffer the consequences? Assuming he did it Bishoge, he would have to bring a Korban Chatos. Or shall we say, no, this is only an Isur Dirabanan. This is not an Isur Doraisa at all. Now here, I'm just going to summarize give you an overview of a number of Rishonim and how they interpret this sugya. There's a very substantial group of Rishonim. Again, these are not Rishonim that we normally, you know, have access to, but there are so many of them that it pays to mention them. It's the Rimi Lumil, the Piskei Arid, it's what's called a miyuchas l'ran. All of them say the following. What was the Gemara's suffix over here? Whether Gilgul, in the case of a Beitza, is that considered Bishul or is it not considered Bishul? That was the Yisod, that was the fundamental issue here. Because in the case of regular foods, then we have something called Kemaychel Bejosoy. And if a person takes raw food and he cooks it on Shabbos over the fire to the point to which it reaches Michael Ben Josoy, he's chayav for that. Whether it's Shlish Bishulo or whether it's Chatzi Bishulo. Here, in the case of Beitza, he doesn't reach this level of Kemaychel Ben Josoy. Gilgul Beitza is not really a Bishul Gomor. What happens is that part of the egg inside, as we mentioned earlier, gets hard, gets cooked. But basically, the egg is still very soft, and it's not cooked. But why does the Gemara think that maybe he's going to be chayv chatos here, if it didn't reach Kemaychel ben Josoy? Why should Beitza be different than all other foodstuffs? And the answer is because miktas b'nei adam ochlim osa kach. There are some sort of representation of the population of people who would eat it even in this state, and therefore nechshav hagilgul lebishul. And basically this group of Rishonim is vacillating on the following point. Do we look at bishul objectively in the sense that everybody would consider it cooked, or is it enough if a certain group, shall we say, a representative group of the population, they consider it cooked?
A minority
in this case. Yesh miktas b'nei adam. And the truth is that, in a sense, this is reminiscent of Kemaychel ben Josoy, that Michael ben Josoy itself is not fully cooked. It's cooked for the robbers, you know, on the run, but maybe they represent a minority of the people. And in that sense, we could certainly, how should I say, empathize or appreciate the Gemara's analogy here between Bishul of kol machalos, you know, general universal bishul, and gilgul in the case of a beitza, because when we deal with gilgul in beitza, we're dealing with miktas b'nei adam ha'ochlin osokach, and when we're dealing with kemaychel ben josoy as the universal standard of bishul regarding all other foods, we're also talking about miktas b'nei adam ochlin osokach, and the analogy is very appropriate. You might ask, if that be the case, why did the Gemara think, and although the Gemara rejects this, but there was a Havamina to differentiate between Beitza, in the case of Gilgul Beitza, in the case of Kemaychel ben Josoy. And it could be that Kemaychel ben Josoy is a measurement not only of what's edible for, you know, people who are on the run and might want to eat it, but it's also a measurement of how much of the bishul itself, not in quality, but in quantity, has taken place. So let's say, for example, we go with the shita that Kemaychel ben Josoy equals chatzi bishulo. So let's assume that if bishul takes 15 minutes, you know, he left it on the fire for 7.5 minutes, that's called Kemaychel ben Josoy. So, there, you know, when we talk about Kemaychel ben Josoy, we have two advantages, so to speak. Number one, there are miktas b'nei adam that would eat it when it reaches the state of Kemaychel ben Josoy. Number two, you've already done a substantial amount of the cooking. Most of the cooking is already behind you, or at least half of the cooking is behind you, according to that mandil. Mashen came in the case of a beitza. If you look at it in qualitative terms, yeah, it's just as good, and it's certainly analogous to Michael Ben Josoy. It's miktas b'nei adam ochlin osokach. But if you look at it quantitatively, in terms of what percentage of the bishul is actually behind you, here it's only at the very, very beginning stage. You know, we're talking about a mecham, and he smacks up his egg against the mecham, again, not too hard because it'll crack. And basically, it begins to get a little bit cooked. It's still very much a soft-boiled egg. It's not even boiled yet. We're not talking about a very hot, as we spoke about before, something that's made of cheres, it's earthenware where the heat is intense. And therefore, one could argue, since there's a long process of bishul still ahead of us, that's not called bishul. And the Gemara's Maskana, the name Rav Yosef, from Rav Yosef, is Gilgel Chayav Chatos. And Enochinami Gilgel, from a quantitative point of view, in terms of the quantity, might be much lower than Kemaychel Ben Jesoi, but in terms of the quality of the Bishul, just like in Michael Ben Jesoi, it's Nechal Lemiktas Bnei Adam. Here too, in the case of Gilgul, it's also Nechal Lemiktas Bnei Adam. So all this is one school of thought in the Rishonim, and again, the Gemara is vacillating back and forth as to whether or not this Gilgul is considered Kishir Bishul, and Gilgul in Beitza is equal to Michael Ben Jesoi in Shar Machol Sasurus, and the Maskon is yes, Yochayv Chatos, and this does qualify as Bishul. But the Ritva, representing another group of Rishonim, has a different shot in the Gemara. And the Gemara really is asking not about Beitza. The Gemara understands that Gilgul in Beitza is the same as Bishul in other Macholos, in other foodstuffs. But the Gemara is really asking a question about toldas ha'or, meaning this case of Beitza, which is the ratio of our Mishnah, is a case where he's not putting the egg on the fire. He's just putting the egg against the side of the Mecham. That's called toldas ha'or, meaning the Mecham was heated up by the fire, by the Eish. Now he's cooking his egg, and again, there's no question according to the Tva that Gilgul Beitza equals Bishul. But on the other hand, what method did he use to cook the egg? He didn't put it on the fire. You know, he didn't fry it or broil it. You know, and so forth and so on. But rather, it's an indirect relationship to the fire. He's not directly picking up the heat from the fire, but rather the heat is being transferred to the egg through a medium of toldas ha'or. And the Gemara wants to know, what is toldas ha'or? Is toldas ha'or a tolda? In other words, it's really a malachat ha'oraisin, yechai v'chatos, or is toldas ha'or a drabanan? It's something that drabanan prohibited. Which means that basically, according to the Ritva, our sugya v'boilahu should be placed into a more general context of what we call avos and toldas. The Torah specifies kol malacha lo sasu b'shabbos, and the Gemara in Masechet Chagiga derives from Malechas HaMishkan that the Torah in Parshas Vayakel put Malechas HaMishkan together with Malechas Shabbos, and this is teaching us that all the malachas that were done in the Mishkan are malachas on Shabbos. That's as far as Ovis is concerned. But what about as far as Toldus is concerned? You know, above and beyond the 39 classical violations and Surus HaMalacha, we have millions of Toldus. How do we derive that? And the Gemara says that it says, V'yosa achas mehena. It should have said achas hena. What's the mem, the extra mem, mehena? And that's coming to teach us Toldus. And now we have to look at each Av and see if we can derive from each Av a Tolda. So we have now the Av of Bishul, which means you take a pot of food, you put it on the fire, and you cook the contents of the pot. Now he does something totally different. He heats up a substance, call it a piece of metal in this case, it could have been also earthenware, as we said, and now he uses that metal substance to heat up his food, to cook his egg. That's already an indirect Bishul. In terms of the Tzuras HaMalach, it's radically different. And basically, the Gemara is now vacillating. What happens if you have something, the purpose of doing this Malacha is identical to the Av. The Tolda is identical to the Av in terms of the ultimate result. The result is going to be cooking. There are many different methods of cooking. But the Tzuras HaMalacha, in other words, the methodology, the way that you come to that result and you achieve that goal, that end, is radically different. Is no longer any sort of direct connection between the fire and the food. Is that a told or is it not a told? From the perspective of the totsav, the ultimate end product, it's identical to Bishul. If I gave you two foodstuffs and I asked you to taste them both and tell me which one was cooked through R and which was cooked through toldas R, you would not be able to tell the difference. That's as far as the final end product is concerned. But as far as the method that you employed in order to get to that state and achieve that result of visual is radically different. And it's so radically different that the Gemara is not sure whether Toldos Ha'or would qualify as a told of Meleches Bishul. The similarity here is very weak. It's very limited. It's restricted to the Totsah, but there doesn't seem to be any similarity whatsoever in the Maisa. And the Gemara's answer from Yosef is no. This is a tolda of Meleches Bishul. And Yechayev Achatas, you violated the Doraisa of Meleches Bishul. And why is this a tolda? And the answer is that if you take the spectrum of methodologies through which you cook something, so the classical way that you cook something, that's how they were Mavashal Samamonim in the Mishkan, was you put the food in a pot with water and you put the pot with water on the fire. Then we have the other extreme. The other polar extreme is what we call chama. Chama means solar heat. Solar heat is qualitatively is a totally different type of way of cooking. Again, you might be able to cook an egg on a very hot day, you know, on the equator, you know, somewhere down south, and the heat is intense. But nevertheless, it's a totally different method of bishul, and that's not considered a tsuras habishul. I can use the terminology shalom kederach bishul. That's not the derech habishul. Now, in between these two polar extremes of Eish and Chama, we have many, many different gradations and many cases and methodologies of Bishul that fall in between the cracks. For example, we can talk about Toldos Ha'or. I took the fire, I heated up a metal, and now I use that metal, which is very hot, to cook my food. And what do you say about that case? Is that more similar to R, to Eish Mamish, or is it more similar to Chama? And the Gemara vacillates back and forth about this point in the Boil Hu. That's, I think, how the Ritva is learning. And the final Maskone is, no, it's very similar to Eish. It's not Eish Mamish in a direct sense, it's an indirect Eish. Mashen Ken Chama, that's already the heat of the sun. That's not called Eish at all. And that's what it comes out according to this shot of the Ritva. The Chazon Ish, who of course lived in the last century,
well after the Ritva,
he says that Iboilahu Ha'im Bebeitza Shadaya B'Shehiya B'tzara Mecham Kedelis Bashel Chayev Al Kach Oshachiv Hurak Al Bishol Amatim L'Chol Amacholim. He says the following, that the Gemara was vacillating about the following point. What happens in the case of a Beitza? Truthfully, the Beitza is not cooked here. It reaches the state of Gilgul HaBeitza. In all of the Macholim, he would not be Chayev if it reached that state of Bishol. But in the case of a Beitza, people will eat a soft-boiled egg, even if it's very, very soft. And Bishul is a process by which we take liquids and we harden them. Here, in the case of Beitza, the Gemara says, can we establish new rules and regulations with regard to Beitza that would not apply to other Macholim? Any other Machol that reached a state that would be parallel to Gilgul and Beitza would not consider Bishul. But can we go ahead and consider it Bishul in the case of a Beitza? Meaning, do the categories of Bishul and those methodologies that qualify as a Maisa Bishul in Meleches Shabbos, are they objective and they have to apply universally to all Machalos? Or can we set up a subjective and a relative kind of Bishul? And you can come up with a foodstuff where people eat it even though it doesn't reach the state of Bishul. And now we can say, as far as vis-a-vis that particular foodstuff, that's called Bishul.
Isn't the Chazon Ish sort of giving an explanation to the first group of Rishonim?
Yes and no. I'll tell you the difference, Shmuel, between the first group of Rishonim and the Chazon Ish. The first group of Rishonim are talking about an equation between what we call Gilgul and what we call Kemaychol Ben Josoi. And according to those Rishonim, the suffix in the Gemara, what the Gemara is vacillating, revolves around the following tzir, you know, the following point. And that is, can we consider Meichel Ben Josoi as something that's half cooked as far as the quality of the food is concerned? Or do we say no, that Michael Ben Josiah is half cooked as far as the quantity is concerned? How much bishul is behind you? How much bishul is in front of you? The Gemara had no problem once we can establish that Gilgul Beitzah is equal to Kemaychel Ben Josai, because it's already half cooked. Half cooked in the sense that just like Kemaychel Ben Josai is half cooked, and X number of, you know, representation of the population as minority, the silent minority would eat this Kemaychel Ben Josai, so too there's a silent minority that would eat it Gilgul Beitzah. And that alone would be enough, according to one side of the Gemara Safay, to make Gilgul Beitzah into Kemaychel Ben Josai. The other time the Gemara was to say, wait a minute, you really haven't cooked it much. You know, you still want to keep it in the boiling water for another 10 minutes. You know, all that passed was a half a minute. You still have 10, you know, 20 times that amount of time. That's not Kemaychel Ben Josai. Kemaychel Ben Josai means the meat is half cooked. You put it in the, you know, in the pot in the oven for 5 minutes. It needs another 5 minutes. Here you need 20 times the amount of time, so that's not called Kemaychel Ben Josai. And basically, what the Gemara is analyzing is what is Kemaychel Ben Josai, and what constitutes Bishul. The Chazon Ish is adding another element into the equation, another variable. Is there such a thing as setting up a new standard of Bishul for a particular foodstuff that's unique and subjective relative to that foodstuff? Meaning, the Gemara understood that from the perspective of what constitutes bishul, Gilgul Issa doesn't rate. It doesn't cut the mustard, as we'd say. But nevertheless, the Gemara thinks that since in the case of a beta, once there's a very limited process of bishul, it's already considered edible. Then maybe we could set up a brand new standard and definition of bishul with regard to one foodstuff. Can we single out one foodstuff, or do we have to put it all in one category?
When you were explaining the first opinion, I had this idea, which I think might be the same as the Chazon Ish, that some people really do not find soft-boiled eggs edible. They have to have it cooked to a certain level, or right, there's no chance that they'll eat it.
Right.
And if it's a subjective thing, then you could say, according to those people, it's like never bishul.
Oh, so then I would say the following, that, yeah. But what about Michael Ben Josai? I would not eat something that's Michael Ben Josai, but that's the...
No, but somebody would, and their claim is nobody should. Kind of.
Ah, well, I don't know, maybe you're right, maybe there's a health issue.
Let's say, theoretically, there's a too soft-boiled egg that no one in the world will eat. And if you did that on Shabbat, then you can have a shiloh.
So let's leave it for now. Again, the main thing that I wanted to tell you here is that the question here is either a question about the case of beitza, and is this considered cooking as far as a beitza is concerned, or the Gemara is raising a much more fundamental issue about toldos acham. I'm sorry, again, I crossed that out. Toldos or, and is toldos age, toldos or, is that considered a malacha d'oraisa? That's what I wanted to leave you with. So Amar Rav Yosef, Gilgal Chayav Chatos. So the final maskon is, yes, you're Chayav Chatos.
What is that?
So this is the last line on Daf Lamed Ches Amid Beis. Now,
you should have to turn a page after that, right?
Yeah, we're going to turn the page in just a second, but before we do that, I just want to point out one thing. And that is that there's a pirush on Masechta Shabbos, which has recently been published and is quoted here in the note, called Rabbeinu Prachya. He was a Jew from Egypt, and he lived about 1,000 years ago. He was a Talmud in the Beis Medrash of the Rambam, back in Cairo. And we take his pirush very seriously, even though, again, it was not accessible for many, many centuries. But now we have it. And he claims that even according to Rav Yosef, who says that Yechayv Chatos, for the case of Gilgul, that's not considered an Av Malacha, that's only considered a Tolda. Now, I'm not sure exactly what Rabbeinu Prachya has in mind here when he says that according to Rav Yosef, Gilgal Beitza B'tzada Mechon is only a tolda. Now, first of all, what's the difference between an av and a tolda as far as halacha l'maisa is concerned? Both are chayav achatos and both are chayav skila.
Ma'aseh nifrad.
Right, but what's the nafkimina? So pashtus the nafkimina would be as far as hasra is concerned, meaning that the tolda separates itself as a new category, a new shame isur derived from the av, and once it's derived from the av, you have to give hasra in the name of the tolda. That's one possibility. There may be another possibility, and that is if, let's say, you violate the tolda together with the av in what's called Hele Machas, in one forgetfulness. So he forgot it was Shabbos, and he cooked X on the fire, he cooked Y on the side of the pot, you know, on the Mecham, you know, the Tzara Mecham. And the question now is he Chaya for the Tolda? It could be that since it's only a Tolda, he's not really Chaya for the Tolda. He's only Chaya for the Ah. So be it as it may, you know, whether you classify something as an av malach or a tolda has very important repercussions halacha l'maisa. And Rabbeinu Prachya goes out of his way to say that what we're dealing with here in the case of Gilgal habeitza b'tzad ha-mecham, we're dealing with a tolda and not with the av. But I'm not sure what he means. Does he mean that because beitza is not really cooked, it's only Gilgal, it can only be a tolda, it can't be an av. It's not real bona fide classical bishul. Or maybe he means something else. He means to say that tolda sa'esh is only a tolda. That if you heat something up through a metal substance that was heated up by the fire, you've only violated a told of Bishul. That's not considered Bishul Ba'av Molach. And this depends on the two ways of
it. It could be Ein Derech Bishul Lechach, if you manage to cook something even in the abnormal pattern.
Well, again, Shmuel, I'm going to save Ein Derech Bishul Lechach for later on. That's going to be in my back pocket. I'll tell you why, because I'm going to try to prove to you that Ein Derech Bishul Lechach is something that completely removes a malacha d'oraisa, and it's not d'oraisa at all. Here, Rabbeinu Prachya is vacillating as to whether or not it's an av malacha or a tolda, but it's certainly a d'oraisa, and it generates a chiyuv misa and a chiyuv chatos in the case of shoga. So that's why I'm avoiding that phrase of derech bishul. But what I am saying is that since tolas ha'or is not the same as putting the pot directly on the fire, that drops it one level down to that of a tolda. And again, whether or not Rabbeinu Bechai means that or that really depends upon what the suffix in the Gemara was. And we saw it's two schools of thought in the Rishonim. If the suffix was about beitza, then Rabbeinu Prach is coming to tell you that even according to Rabbi Yossi's Maskonan, Ichayv Chatas for Gilgal Beitza, that's only B'Torah's Tolda, but it's not an Av of Melechus Mevashel. If on the other hand we go with the Ritva and others that the Gemara was vacillating about Tolda Sa'esh, as to whether Tolda Sa'esh is D'Oraisa or D'Rabbanan, then what Rabbeinu Prach is telling us is that L'Maskona Ein Alchinami Tolda Sa'esh is D'Oraisa, but it's not an Av Melech. Tolda Sa'esh is radically different than Eish Mamish, a direct fire, and therefore it's only a tolda, and it's not enough. Okay, now we start pretty much a new sugya. Omar Mar, Brei D'Ravina, Afana Nami T'Nin. So Mar Brei D'Ravina is going to now invoke a Mishnah from the end of Masechet Shabbos, Daf Kuf Mem Hey Amid Beis, and based on that Mishnah, he is going to prove that what we're dealing with here is a Malacha D'Oraisa. I told him maybe according to Rabbeinu Prachya, but albeit whichever way you slice the cake, we're dealing with a D'Oraisa. And now we turn to Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. So Harvey, make sure you're now on Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, because what we're looking at this point is a Mishnah that's being quoted here on the top of the page from Kuf Mam Hei Amud Beis. Now this Mishnah is going to take us 5 lines up into the 2 dots on the 5th line, Shmamina. And those words, Shmamina, are the culmination of the statement of Mar Brei D'Ravina. Notice, here's where he derives from a Mishnah later on a definite support conclusion about the nature of cooking this egg in a Gilgal B'tzad HaMecham situation, which means either that this kind of bishul with regard to an egg is considered bishul, or alternatively that tolas ha'esh is considered a malacha d'oraisa of bishul. And to be honest with you, I find it a lot easier to learn this Gemara according to the first school of thought that we mentioned. The Rishonim, like the Rimi Lunil, the Piskei Arid, the Miuchas Laran, they're learning that the question is whether or not we can set up a new kind of bishul with regard to beitza, because people will eat this beitza even though it's not really cooked. That's what I think is the simple way of learning this.
That Mishnah, there's no beitza.
Right, but there's going to be something called Kalei HaBishul. And what we're going to try to establish, what my brain, the Ravina, is going to try to establish, is that there's a very subjective or relative kind of definition of bishul. And an action which would not qualify as bishul in other foodstuffs, in vegetables, in grains, in fruits, whatever have you, would qualify for certain kinds of food. And that's called kalei bishul. And an egg, although, again, you're not cooking it fully. It's not a boiled, hard-boiled egg. But nevertheless, immediately as you start the process of bishul, it reaches this Gilgal state, and that's edible for certain people. So that's what I call the relative definition of bishul. That's what Mar Brei D'Ravina is going to try to prove from the Mishnah of Kalei HaBishul.
No, but aren't Kalei HaBishul, I was thinking about this when you were discussing the Gilgal, things that are Kalei HaBishul, L'chulei Alma, once they've been, let's say, like even in Klisheni, they
right,
change
so that
form to be totally cooked. And the Gilgal, you can still argue, is that really total cooking?
Oh, I hear what you're saying. So let's hold off on that till we see a little bit more about this Mishnah on Daf Kuf Mem Hayam and Beis. But again, I was only introducing this to stimulate your curiosity about something else. And that is the Ritva. Because again, the Ritva is learning that the whole sugya about Beitza was not about Beitza, but it was about the Mecham. Mm-hmm. It was about the Toldos Ha'esh. And the Gemara was vacillating back and forth whether the Toldos Ha'esh is Doraisa or Durabona. That's how the Ritva learns this sugya. If that be the case, then Rav Yosef's maskana was that Toldos Ha'esh is Doraisa, it's a Molochin Doraisa, it generates a Chiv Chatos. And now, Mar Brei D'Ravina is supposedly coming to quote a Mishnah to prove that Toldos Ha'esh is considered a Molochin Doraisa. So that makes it a lot more complicated, a lot more challenging to find something in this Mishnah that has to do with Toldos Ha'esh. I don't know. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm much more comfortable if you're talking about, well, the beitza is not completely cooked. Can there be a bishul even though it's an incomplete cooking? The beitza, the process of bishul has only just begun. Can you do something that normally would not, you know, not reach the state of kemayach ben josoy and yet consider it as bishul? Okay. Now remind me, please, not to forget, I just read my note, that I already forgot something, that I wanted to add Perachik Tveria. Okay, fine. But I don't want to stop while we're ahead. You know, we have a certain momentum. Let's see if we can continue with that momentum. Okay. So here's the language of the Mishnah. We're on Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, all the way on top. Now the Mishnah starts with the word kol, and Rashi adds the word maluach. So let's just say a few words about maluach. Back in the day, when they didn't have refrigeration as sophisticated as we do today, in order to make sure that meat would not spoil, and perhaps they did with other foods as well, fish, other foods, what they would do is they would salt it, heavily salt it. The salt would preserve the meat, but right now it's unedible. You can't eat it because there's so much salt in it. And what you have to do is you have to soak it in warm water, or maybe very warm water. I'm using the word warm deliberately. It's not hot water. We're not talking about Yad Soledes mode. And through that soaking process, which is called Shriya, they would remove the salt, and the meat became edible at this point. So the Mishnah says, "Kol sheba b'cham." It means that you did what's called shriya. You took this very heavily salted meat and you soaked it. Okay, that's called shriya. When did you soak it? Milifnei haShabbos. Again, we have to see what happens if you would do such a thing on Shabbos and take salted meat and soak it in hot water. But right now, he did it on Erev Shabbos. The Mishnah wants to address the following question. If he did this on Erev Shabbos, can we assume, therefore, that whatever that hot water achieved, that's done with already. That's, so to speak, carved in stone. And now, if he wants to let it cool off, maybe he wants to refrigerate it, and now he wants to redo the same process of Shriya a second time, it should be mutter, even though you're taking something cold and you're placing it and soaking it in hot water, but it's already been soaked in hot water one time before. The bishul process of Shriya, whatever that bishul process is, has already been achieved. And therefore the second round of Shriya does not add anything to the first round of Shriya. And that's exactly what the Mishnah's point. Kol sheba b'chamin, if it was already subjected to Shriya on Erev Shabbos, Milifnei Shabbos, is shorin also b'chamin b'Shabbos. You're allowed to take this cold food and heat it up in a Shriya situation. And that's not considered bishul, because whatever bishul you achieve through Shriya, you already achieved before Shabbos in the first Shriya. And this basically reflects the principle called Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. To repeat the same process of bishul a second time around is not something that the halacha validates. But let me ask you a question. What did he do on Erev Shabbos? Did he actually take this food and let's say the salty meat and cook it in a pot?
Sounds like cliché-y.
Oh, I don't know if it's cliché-y. I would say Shriya, as a general rule, is what you call a kli rishon. What do I mean by kli rishon? When the pot is sitting on the fire and the fire is active, that's called bishul mamash. When I shut off the fire and the food is still continuing to cook, but without any fire, that's called Kli Rishon, otherwise known as Shriya. And not only that, by the way, you don't have to turn out off the fire. What's the other alternative? Hello? Anybody home? What's the other alternative for Kli Rishon? Just to take the pot off the fire. Mm-hmm. So again, there are two situations. you leave the pot where it is, turn off the fire, or leave the fire on and take the pot off the fire. Okay. In both cases, you have what's called a kli rishon. And that's called, in the language of the Mishnah, Sharia. And now on Shabbos, having done this once before on Erev Shabbos, he wants to do it again on Shabbos, and once again, he wants to soak this meat in hot water. Now, in the first case on Erev Shabbos, what was his purpose of soaking the meat? As we said before, he wanted to remove what?
The salt.
He's already removed the salt in Erev Shabbos. So presumably the meat is edible, it's no longer salty. So the Mishnah says, you want to heat it up in a kli rishon, you're allowed to do that. Would you be allowed to put it into a pot on the fire?
Yeah.
For sure not. We spoke about Chazara on Shabbos. Chazara on Shabbos is mutter under certain very strict restrictions and under certain conditions. Those conditions have to be met. You know, it has to have been there before, and it's a grufa and a ketumah, and you put it back on. But in the absence of those conditions, you cannot put food on an open fire. However, can I put it into a kli rishon? It's not an open fire. And that's the chiddush of this Mishnah. That the Mishnah says that if you've already done this process of Shriya, the kli rishon on Erev Shabbos, you can repeat the process on Shabbos. Now, the truth is, there is a big chiddush here. First of all, when you repeat the process, you're heating up the meat. Secondly, it could be that you're adding a certain amount of softness to the meat by putting it into this kli rishon. But the answer is that kli rishon, whatever it achieves, that's not called bishul, and that's mut. Now, it's a bit of a chiddush, because when you think about it, what changed over here? Just simply that he took it off the fire. The contents of the pot might be, you know, the water in the pot might be very, very hot. Or, for example, he turns off the fire, but the water in the pot is boiling hot. But it doesn't matter. It's not bishul because it's kli rishon. But again, only if the process of kli rishon was already achieved on Erev Shabbos. So if I would ask you the following question, I have salty meat that's raw. Am I allowed to put it into a kli rishon on Shabbos itself? The answer is no. And the impression you get is that kli rishon could generate bishul d'oraisa. Again, I'm not sure about this. This may be a very shaky kind of premise, but that's the impression I get. When do we say that kli rishon is mevashel and I'm chayav? That's only if I put it into a kli rishon on Shabbos when it was not cooked at all on Erev Shabbos. Which means that this is the first process of bishul. But if that process of bishul was already concluded on Erev Shabbos, then to repeat that process of kli rishon on Shabbos is absolutely mutter. That's what we have so far. So kol shebo bechamin milufnei Shabbos shorin oso bechamin b'Shabbos. Bechol shelo bo bechamin milufnei Shabbos madichin oso bechamin b'Shabbos. Now notice that the Mishnah changed its language. Until now, what was the subject of this Mishnah? What does he want to do with this meat? Sharia. Now what does he want to do with this meat? Hadach. What's the difference between Shriya and Hadach? And notice that in the second case in the Mishnah, it was lo b'abacham b'fnei Shabbos, meaning it was not cooked at all on Shabbos. So you're dealing with raw meat. And now he's putting the raw meat into what? A kli rishon on Shabbos? That for sure he can't do. So what does he mean? Kol shelo bava cham milfnei Shabbos, etc., etc. B'Shabbos. I skipped three words. We're not talking about Shriya. We're talking about Hadoch. How do you translate Hadoch into English?
Rinsing.
He's rinsing it out. And rinsing is not a prasub bishul. You're not allowed to soak it in this water because it's a kli rishon and it's never been cooked. You're going to cook it, but you're allowed to soak it. What does that mean, soak it? I'm sorry, you're allowed to rinse it, I meant to say. What does it mean to rinse it? So that's already called Iruri Kli Rishon. Aleph, Resh, Vav, Yud. Pouring from a Kli Rishon. Now, what's the status in Halacha of Iruri Kli Rishon? That's going to be a gigantic machlokes between all the Rishonim and Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam holds that Iri Kli Rishon has the same status as Kli Rishon, and it's Mavashel. The other Rishonim say no. Only Kli Rishon Mamish is Mavashel, but not Iri Kli Rishon. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, we have to figure out why the Mishnah would allow Hadacha, because presumably we're talking about Hadacha, which is Iri Kli Rishon. He's pouring out from a Kli Rishon, and according to Rabbeinu Tam, that has the same status as Kli Rishon. But Tosfos Divrei Maskil Kol, that's the first full Tosfos on Daf Lamed Tesav and Aleph, he claims in the name of the Rashbam that Kli Rishon is Dafka Kli Rishon, but not Iri Kli Rishon. That Iri Kli Rishon, when you pour it off from a Kli Rishon, that's called a Kli Sheni, and it's not Mavasha. So in other words, the Hadacha that we're talking about here, which is Mutter, is Iri Kli Rishon. According to who? According to the Rashbam. And the Mishnah is going to allow it because Shriya B'Kli Rishon is Mavashel, but not Iri Kli Rishon, otherwise known as Hadoch. However, that pshat can't work out according to Rabbeinu Tam, because Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that Kli Sheni is different than Iri Kli Rishon. That although Kli Sheni is not Mavashel, nevertheless Iri Kli Rishon is Mavashel. So if Iri Kli Rishon is Mavashel, then we cannot interpret Hadacha here in the Mishnah as Iri Kli Rishon. We're going to have to assume that the Hadacha here is Iri Kli Sheni. And that's a bit of a jump. Because we're going to have to say that he took it from the original pot, then he poured the water into the second pot, now he's pouring off from the second pot. So Tosis doesn't like this whole business. Why? Because the Mishnah in Kol Shalo, what's the language? Shalo Baba Chamin, the Erev Shabbos, the Mishnah allows Hadacha, but not Shriya. According to Rabbeinu Tam, if we're talking about a Kli Sheni, then even Shriya itself should be Mutter. The Machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and the other Rishonim is only this middle stage, which is called Iri Kli Rishon. But as far as Kli Sheni is concerned, even Rabbeinu Tam, everybody agrees universally it's not Mavashel. Now, how do we get a heter here of Hadacha? According to the Rashbam and the other Rishonim, Hadacha fits in very beautifully. Because Hadacha means Iri Kli Rishon, and Iri Kli Rishon ain't a Mavashel. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, he's forced to interpret this Sugya, and this Mishnah, as referring to a Kli Sheni. If it's a Kli Sheni, why do you have to tell me Hadacha? Let's go back to Shriya. I can take this food that's raw and put it into a Kli Sheni on Shabbos. Why not? Kli Sheni and a Mavashel. And even Rabbeinu Tam agrees a Kli Sheni and a Mavashel. That's the Kash of Tosfos. So Tosfos answers the following. Me'achar v'amayim shebekli sheni chamin Nirakim Avashal vi Asu Chazal Lishosbo Afsha Klapiemis Enkach Mishum Bish. Tosfos says something pretty way out. That, you know what, when you look at Kli Sheni, how do you know it's a Kli Sheni? It looks identical as to a Kli Rishon. So if we're going to allow you to do Shri on a Kli Sheni, people are going to come to assume that you're allowed to do Shriya even in a Kli Rishon. Then Tosfos offers a second approach. And he says the following: for sure, shri and a klisheni is mutter, even though it's raw food. The Mishnah says madichim. Why didn't the Mishnah say shorim, as it did in the Reisha? After all, going according to Rabbeinu Tam, and we have to be talking about a klisheni according to Rabbeinu Tam. And the answer is that this Mishnah uses the term hadacha to teach you that there is Mishnah and a klisheni. And that's going to be the next part of the Mishnah, which is called Dag HaMaliach, or Maliach Yashan. So again, according to the first Teretz in Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam is going to hold that Shri and a klisheni is awesome. According to the second shot in Tosfos, Shri of a klisheni is mutter. The only reason the Mishnah mentioned klisheni here, which is called Adocha, is in order to introduce the cases of Moliach HaYoshan and Kulias HaIstinim. That there the Isser is even Shriya in a cliche. Again, let's just summarize. Kol Shalo Ba B'chamim L'Fnei HaShabbos Madichon Oso B'chamim B'Shabbos. Two interpretations. One interpretation, which reflects the Rashbam Shita, is that we're talking about Irui Kli Rishon. That's the Lashon of Madich. In other words, to put it directly into the Kli Rishon and let it soak there, which is called Shriya, that for sure would be awesome, because it's raw meat. And we're talking about a Kli Rishon. But what we're allowed to do is not Shriya, but Adacha, which means to take the Kli Rishon, pour its contents, even if it looks boiling, over the food. Why? Because Iri Kli Rishon is not Mavasha. So Rabbo said, just imagine the following scenario. You've got a hot kettle of water. It was just heated, just boiled. It's mamish boiling hot. You have a raw piece of meat. You can take that hot kettle and pour its contents on the meat. That's how the Rashbam is learning this sugya. That's pshat number one. The second pshat is Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam holds that to pour hot water from a Kli Rishon onto food, raw food, is called Bishon. So how could the Mishnah allow it? The answer is Madichno Sambachama means he's pouring out from a Kli Sheni. So he took this kettle of water and he put it into a second kettle that was not on the fire, and he took that second kettle and he poured it onto raw food. And that he's allowed to do. That's called Iri Kli Sheni, or in the language of the Mishnah, that's called Hadoch. Now, if you go with that second approach, would you be allowed to do Shriya on a Kli Sheni? Because after all, according to the second shot, we're talking about Iri Kli Sheni. Iri always brings it down one notch. So what about the original Kli Sheni? So that would be awesome. Why? Because you might come to confuse it with a Shriya and a Kli Rishon. Then Tosfos offers another possibility, and just to review, and he says that Ein Chinami Shri and a Kli Sheni, even according to Rabbeinu Tam, is mutter, even with raw food. But the word Medichin in the Mishnah is coming to tell us something about Maliach HaYoshan V'Kulius HaIspinon. That there, even Adocha B'Kli Sheni is considered Bishul. So now let's read the next part of the Mishnah. Chutz min ha-maliach ha-yoshon, and this is again going to teach us something about Beitza. V'kulias ha-ispinin, maliach ha-yoshon means that it's been sitting in salt for a long time. Some identify this as herring. Now, I don't know how long they pickle herring. It seems from this Mishnah that we're talking about a year. I know my father used to tell me that the big celebration of Simchas Torah was that they opened a new barrel of herring on Simchas Torah. That was back in Plisa, where my father came from. And he told me that there were two other occasions when they did such a thing as part of a celebration, in order to indicate how great of a celebration it was. One was Achron Shel Pesach, the last day of Pesach. They were Lubavitcher Chassidim. So Chassidim do not eat Gibrachs, anything that's soaking, during Pesach. But on the eighth day, which is called Yom Tov Sheni, they eat Gibrachs. So in order to demonstrate the great Simcha, they would open up a new barrel of herring. And the other occasion in which they opened up a new barrel of herring was for a Bar Mitzvah. That was the big celebration of Bar Mitzvah.
I heard of that.
A piece of herring for a Bar Mitzvah. Today, I can't begin to tell you what people are spending on bar mitzvahs. My son told me about a certain bar mitzvah that he was invited to. It was a week long. They flew you here, they flew you there. Just a bar mitzvah. It was probably the equivalent of the expenditures of the ELC for a year, just for a bar mitzvah. But my father said a bar mitzvah back in his shtetl meant they opened up a new barrel of herring. So in any event, he's got this herring and he wants to soak it in a kli sheni. And we have a rule that kli sheni ain't a mevasha. The Mishnah says it's awesome. Even, number two.
Even though
kli sheni ain't a mevasha, it's awesome. Then we have another case here. We have a case of kulias ha'ispinin. This is also some sort of a soft fish that's easily cooked.
Didn't we say that?
Rashi says it's a tuna fish.
First fried, then isn't that the guy?
Mm-hmm.
It was first fried, then baked.
Well, now we're talking about soaking it, just soaking it in hot water in a kli sheni.
And mixing up my dish.
Does Rashi call it a tuna? I don't know. Tunina. You see the Rashi four lines down from the top. Tunina. I have to assume that's a tuna fish. David, can you check that out with your wife?
Yeah.
How do you say tuna in French?
I don't know, but the article is going with Spanish mackerel.
Oh, mackerel, okay.
Whoa. That's quite a charm.
Now, there seems to be an indication here that we're talking about Spanish mackerel because of the word ispinin. What does that word sound like to you if you would...
Spanish.
Exactly, Spanish. So we're talking España, which is Spain. In Lashon Kodesh it's called shibuta, and it's a mackerel. Let's call it a mackerel. And it's, again, a very soft kind of fish. Very skinny, very small, very soft, and it gets cooked very, very quickly. This is what we call kali abishal, something that can be cooked very quickly, maybe tea. You know, if you take the original tea leaves or tea seeds and just pour hot water on it, boiling hot water on it, it cooks. And you get a good glezel of tea. Even though it's Iri Kli Rishon. Now we said according to Rashbam, Iri Kli Rishon is Ein Mevashal. Now we're talking about a kli sheni. And yet it's Mevashal. And why? Because Hadachasam Zuig Marmalach. And that's a very dramatic statement. That Hadacha equals Gmar Malach. What does that mean? Is it Bishul or is it not Bishul? So I have here a footnote, a very short footnote, but there's a lot of meaning here in this footnote. He writes, in the name of the Mishnah Berurah, the Bir Halacha, and this we want to, in Mirtz Hashem, get into tomorrow, believe me, that the Prima Gadim says, Yechayef HaMakim HaPatish. This is not Bishul. But anything that's called Gmar Malacha is Makim HaPatish, which is Gemara later on, Adaf Ayin Hei Amid Beis, that anything that's Gmar Malacha is called Makim HaPatish. Does everybody here know what Makim HaPatish is all about?
It's the final stages.
Right. So here's the final stage of taking this Dag HaSpinon and putting it into Kulius HaSpinon and putting it into Hadacha, and somehow the Hadacha removes all the salt and it makes it very soft and it's edible. That hadach is called the Gemar Malacha. Again, only because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't subject to this hadach on Erev Shabbos. So you're taking it raw and you're putting it in, soaking it in a klisheni. That's called the Gemar Malacha. That's called Makom Patish. I'm just not sure that Makom Patish applies to food stuff, but he certainly assumes this the Bir Halacha. He must have, or the Prima Gada before him, he must have sources for that.
I was confused. The other fish dish we discussed was Kesed Harsana. That was the one that was baked and fried.
Oh, I see.
But aren't we just removing the salt so we can eat the fish? Isn't that just like removing the package of smoked salmon? Like,
well, no, it's not just removing the salt. It's also softening it. Apparently the heat not only accomplishes two goals. It removes the salt and it softens the food and makes it edible. Once you make it edible, that's called Gmar Malach. So he says, the Prima Gadam says Gmar Malach means Makom Patish, but everybody else and their uncle would say that Gmar Malach here means Bishul. Now we swing back to our case of Beitza. Shmamina. Right, just the word Shmamina. That's all you have to know. In other words, the Gemara doesn't spell out what Shmamina means, but we can fill in the blanks here. And basically, Shmamina means that when the Mishnah says Zui Gmar Malachon, it means whenever you take a foodstuff and people eat it, even though it's partially cooked, that's called Gmar Malachon. In other words, it could be that this Dag HaSpinon or the Maliach HaYoshin, if you really wanted to cook it the right way, you would fry it on an open fire or something along that side. But Hadocha or Shriya B'Klisheni is enough to make it edible. And that's called Gmar Malacha, because some people would eat it in that stage. So Miktas HaNoshim Regilim Lechlo B'Miktas Bishul is therefore Chalal Dagas Bishul Zubi also Machal Shem Bishul Gom. It's considered Bishul. And why? Because people would eat it after it's subject to this Shriya in a klisheni. And the same thing applies to Gilgul Beitza. That you put the Beitza on the side of the Mecham, and there are those people who are willing to eat it, even though to you and I, it might be a too raw of an egg. It's not cooked. But there are those who would eat it. And that process of Bishul is completed to make it into Gmar Malacha as soon as we have a state in which people, some people would eat it.
I mean, some people eat fish that's just been salted, though. You know, that's the way of cooking. It's just the salt. Couldn't you say this rinsing is just a secondary cooking function that's already been cooked by the salt?
The impression I get, David, is that if you have a raw fish, again, today things have changed, I don't know, but back in the day, if you had a raw fish, even if you remove the salt from the fish, it's still raw. It needs some sort of basic or minimum cooking.
But isn't that what the herring is in the bucket? Just a salty water solution?
I mean, if the water is not hot, then I don't know if it's going to cook at all.
It doesn't. It doesn't cook at all. It's just the salt does the cooking for you. I've had this famous old Dutch Jewish dish of just wrapping up salmon in salt and spices, and they take it out and they still have it today. I mean, that's
well, we have something called sushi, right? Sushi is.
Yeah, but that's. I'm saying the salt actually cooks it. I mean, it's
salt. People,
I was going to say kavushka bavushal. I think the Prima Gadim would like that phrase today. It's the Gemara Bishul, but it's not Bishul, so it's kibavushal.
It just sounds like pickling.
Pickling. That's the process.
But then you've got cooking after cooking, which could be a leniency. It doesn't seem to go that way.
I don't know.
No one talks about it, huh?
No, I'm sure somebody's going to discuss it. I just didn't come across it yet. My assumption was that for most people, it's not edible until it has some minimum cooking in hot water. You're saying no, but many people would salt it and then eat it raw. So I can't tell you about that.
Sounds good.
I've been to places on this. It's a common dish. I have to remember what it's called. They just wrap up a side of salmon in all these sort of herbs and stuff, and then leave it in the fridge a couple of days, wrapped up in plastic, mm-hmm. And then it's good to go.
Well, I guess it's not far from lox. What happens to lox? It's smoked. Right? Is that cooking also?
I guess that's something a little bit more fire-based.
More of it.
you have any footnotes there in your Gemara? Maybe somebody. I don't see it here.
This isn't coming up from Dr. Rav Hartskol. It's just from my own personal experience.
Right. No. No. I was asking if you have footnotes on your page, though, right?
Yeah.
See, check the footnote. See if he has a footnote about the fact that the salting itself might have made it edible.
No. I already read the footnote.
My impression here is that it needs some sort of minimal bishul in order to make it edible.
Oh, hang on. So we're talking about old salted fish, this Spanish mackerel. It's a tender type of salted fish whose salting allows it to be eaten without cooking.
Ah. So why is he chayfa hadocha then? Yeah. So again, how does he interpret hadochasam zui gmar malachtam?
They still seem to think that you need this rinsing of hot water for it.
Right, because he must address that. He can't, you know.
He doesn't like.
Look in the Gemara. Can you isolate in the text of the Gemara the words hadochasam zui gmar malachtam? You have that? Is there a footnote on those words?
Say it again.
Look in the Gemara itself in the text before you get to the footnotes for the words hadochasam zohi gmar malachtam.
Right.
Because again, hadocha means that he's soaking it in hot water, and that itself is considered bishul.
Rinsing. This is the rinsing. Shehadachdan is rinsing, right?
Okay.
Not soaking.
Well, that depends. Again, if it's irikli rishon according to the Rashbam, then it's already considered like a klisheni. According to Rabbeinu Tam, it would have to be soaking it in a klisheni or pouring it out of a klisheni, depending on the two days in Tosus and Rabbeinu Tam. But I'm asking a different question here. When he says hadachasam zui gmar malachton, what does that mean? He must have a footnote there.
He
just completely omits it?
He doesn't have it on there.
In my footnote, it just says the following. It says that
He just says, since rinsing with hot water is all these fish need to be fit for consumption, this is considered their cooking.
Yeah, but just a minute ago you told me the salting was enough to make it fit.
I said it came from my head.
No, you read it to me in the footnote.
You read a different footnote.
Oh, right.
You just read it to me, David. Are you...
Both of these fish, but they still say require rinsing with hot water to be fit for consumption. Yes, the salt water.
He says that?
So that it's a continuation of that same point that I read you about the salting cooks the fish.
Well, so read the whole thing. You know, review what you said and give me the other piece. Go ahead.
All right, so the salted fish is a salted fish from last year. And
and
a Spanish mackerel is a tender type of salted fish whose salting allows it to be eaten without cooking.
Without cooking.
But both of these fish merely require rinsing with hot water to be fit for consumption.
Merely?
Merely.
M-E-R-E-L-Y.
That's right.
Okay, so
they only need rinsing with hot water.
So he's saying A and not A at the same time.
Exactly.
First he's saying that the salting process makes it fit for consumption, then he says it's not fit for consumption
the salting allows it is the cooking. The rinsing allows the consumption.
Oh, I see. And I see what he's saying. Wait a minute. You mean to say that basically once it was salted for this long period of time, it's edible. The only problem is it's so salty I can't eat it. I rinse it to remove the salt. And the removing of the salt itself makes it edible.
Exactly.
Wow, that's wild. So wait a minute. Why do I have to do that in hot water? Can't you remove the salt in cold water? Only hot water will remove the salt?
It probably does it better.
Doesn't address that point.
So again, I'm gonna if David, if you won't get angry at me, I'm gonna ask you to read it a third time, if you don't mind.
The old salted fish,
right?
A salted fish from last year, and a Spanish mackerel is a tender type of salted fish whose salting allows it to be eaten without cooking. Both of these fish merely require rinsing with hot water to be fit for consumption. Now he puts in brackets here a Rashi on 145b.
All right, so maybe we should study that Rashi. But
this works.
But David, do you see the ambiguity here? He's almost deliberately ambiguous. He's not. I don't understand the Metzius too well here.
And then the next point, he says, since rinsing with hot water is all these fish need to be fit for consumption, this is considered their cooking. So he's saying both ways. He's sort of saying it both ways, isn't he?
Yeah, I said it a little differently than him.
He's talking around.
I wanted to say that the salting process goes so far, but then you still have to soften it up, and the softening is through the soaking or the pouring the hot water on it. He's saying no, that already the salting per se makes it fit for consumption. I just got to get rid of the salt, and the soaking the hot water is to get that's going to get rid of the salt. He doesn't explain why you can't get rid of the salt by using cold water.
I think that's pretty obvious, no? Like hot water, what does salt dissolve in better or quicker? Cold water or hot water?
Right.
Hot water removes salt much quicker, no? It dissolves and...
Right, I guess because maybe the salt is already absorbed in the fish itself. It's not like, you put salt on top of a fish, and you can actually see the salt on the outside with your eyes, and then you just rinse it off or you brush it off. I don't know if you need hot water, I'm not sure. But here he's talking about... there's been like some sort of process in which the salting is like almost penetrated into the thing. You need hot water to get it out.
Yeah.
But again, it's very different than what I said. He's saying that the purpose of the hot water is to get rid of the salt.
Right.
I was saying that it's not yet edible. That you need two things, A plus B equals C. A, you need the salting process, but B, you need some sort of a minimal bishul to make it soft enough to eat. And that happens through hot water, even if it means rinsing or pouring and so forth and so on in a klisheni situation, but that itself is part of the process of bishul. He's saying it's not; it's really just removing the salt. I think if I read him correctly,
and it's more like the makom patish kind of
right. According to Prima Gordon, that we're talking about makom patish, that makes a lot more sense. The salting was necessary to make it edible, but now the salting paradoxically makes it unedible, and now I need a process of getting rid of the salt. That's not bishul. It happens to be that I need hot water, but that hot water is not a mavashil. It's only making it edible by removing the salt.
Right.
That fits into the Prima Gordon, but nobody seems to accept this Prima Gordon. They all say it's bishul. And that's why my premise is that the hot water here in the cliché is being mavashil, and that's the Gemara Malach. And it's Gemara Malach and Malach has bishul.